Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Nuchtigal.
And I am Donna Prisgintas.
We're here on this fine radio station. We come to you every Tuesday live at noon, live without a net. And we are repeated again, 7 o'clock in the evening and Tuesday. If you just can't get enough of us, we get together at in the Donalana Kitchen to talk about food and farming. We give advice, recipes, opinions. Lots of things happen today. And this is a community radio station. Volunteers make us happen, and we appreciate support. Support from lots of nice people.
Support for the Donalana Kitchen comes from Wheatsfield Co-op, your full-service natural foods grocery in Ames, community-owned, community-focused since 1974, open daily 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., located downtown at 413 Northwestern, just off Main Street in Ames. Everyone can shop Wheatsfield Co-op.
It feels more and more like fall. And
autumnal.
A little nippy. You have to kind of rustle around in the back of your dresser drawer and figure out where you put that sweater.
Those long johns, the leggings. The trees are
pretty.
Yeah.
And it was terrible, terrible windy yesterday. Oh. Unusually. My condolences. Donna lost her Tithonia yesterday.
Yes. Lana and I had a Tithonia experiment all summer because she started me with the seedlings. And those are Mexican sunflowers, one of my favorite beautiful little orange things. And the hummingbirds come. And we had so much rain. These Tithonia grew to over 10 feet tall. But no flowers. Then finally, I'm getting buds, right? It looks like it's just ready to bloom, and I had even tied them up at about 4 feet. So yesterday I come out, and right where I tied them up, just above that, whoom, the whole thing is down.
Oh.
No Tithonia this year, I guess.
I think a lot of things bit the dust. Mine did okay because I let the weeds grow up around mine, and I did get
mine were right by a fence even.
Well,
I know.
So much for fall.
I think the rain gave it so much top greenery that they just were, you know, kind of brittle, and they grew too fast too big or too something.
It's time to say goodbye to some things. I do believe there might be a frost coming later this week.
Oh, and you'll get your frost before me, right?
Well, I'm a little farther north than you, yes.
Yeah, and you're out in the country.
Out in the country.
Oh, boy. In the low, does it just settle down in those low creek areas and you get that first?
That'd be the first, but we'll see.
Okay,
we'll see
here
what
we
happens.
Go. We're on our way into winter.
Let's call it fall first.
Okay.
We'll today on the Donalana Kitchen, we're going to consider some Scandinavian pastry. We're going to think about bacon and a few other things. And we have a special guest. Tom Wilson from Remnant Hill Farms is with us. And he's going to tell us about
Beginning farmers.
Beginning. That everyone has to begin with something, yes. But first, I'm going to report on a little field trip that I took. I went to the Bethesda Lutheran Church's Scandinavian Coffee Bake Sale and Gift Shop. It was last
delicious,
Friday.
Apparently.
It was most wonderful. They've been doing that since 1957. It's kind of a kickoff to Christmas because you have little Christmassy decorations and things. And all of these wonderful treats. I don't make it every year to the Bethesda Lutheran Church's Scandinavian Coffee, but it's lovely.
Is it a bake sale like?
Well,
thing?
Yeah. But first you can go into this lovely big room. There are women with pretty Scandinavian aprons and Scandinavian hats and things on. And you can, for a little consideration at the door, you can just eat your fill of anything they make. It's most lovely.
So it's all homemade, and these lovely ladies have made their family traditional.
It's most wonderful, and they serve coffee. But then they have another room full of bakery and another room full of crafts, and they're both worth a look. And some of these pastries.
And everything's homemade, right?
Everything is homemade.
Oh, yes.
Okay. There was Fatigman, which is a Christmas cookie called a poor man's cookie, kind of a little folded over thing. Coffee Cross, which is coffee cake. Everyone likes coffee cake. There's coffee go with it. Kringla, one of my favorites. Kringla, crumb cake, kind of a rolled horn crispy thing. Numb. And you can put whipped cream in the middle or leave it plain, but why not go with the whipped cream? Lefse. Lefse, very, very nicely made lefse.
I have not ever had lefse, I keep reading about it.
And there's potato lefse cakes from Norway. And
now, is that a sweet or a savory?
It's a savory. It's a savory. Ooh. And I bought some at the bake shop to take home. Very good the next day. My favorite, here's my favorite hint for next year, all you people that make them next year, rosettes, the deep-fried, crunchy, crispy things with all sorts of sugar on them. I like that.
What kind of flavors?
Well, I don't know.
Are they cinnamon-y, cardamom-y?
No. Here we go. Flour, egg, milk, sugar, salt. And that's it. And then they're just quick fried and covered with sugar.
Is it like a miniature donut or something?
It's like
Like little cartwheels or something.
You can also top that with ice cream or jam or whatever. Or it's good with coffee. And there's sand tarts, fragile almond flavored shells from Sweden. And these were good too. I actually saw some of these. I make them in a little mold, and they had different sizes. They can stack them up into kind of a little cookie Christmas tree. It was quite pretty. And Spritz, lots of Spritz cookies. Those are good.
Look at all this local talent we have.
So that was the Bethesda Lutheran Church of Scandinavian Coffee, held the second Friday in October. And I have one more thing to mention about that wonderful day. I went in the mid-morning, and there were lots of folks there enjoying. I sat at a big round table with some other people. Struck up a conversation with the woman next to me, and she and her daughter were there enjoying things. And before she left, she leaned over and she said to me, "I thought you'd like to know. Yesterday was my birthday. I was 103.
Whoa.
And I looked at this fine young woman. She was just
sprightly, as they would say.
Sprightly. And her name, Edna Esbeck, originally from Elkhorn, a Danish community there, and she grew up there. And she said, "Yes, I'm 103 years old."
Wow.
And I think it was eating all of these good treats. She was a fine person
and
to
baking
get to know.
Them. Maybe baking keeps you younger.
Maybe. But she enjoyed the day, and so did I. And there was a lovely bunch of – I got there kind of late for the bakery. I did happen to snag some – potato pancakes and some kringle to take home.
Yes, well, that sounds pretty good. Mm-hmm. Now, we also had some adventures at the downtown farmers market this week. There was, what was it, a cake? Oh, the bacon contest. Yes, it was the bacon contest, right? So the number two winner, I like this name the best, was the Wilbur Muddy Underbelly Cake with salted caramel bacon, buttercream filling, and chocolate ganache candied bacon. How's that sound to you?
Oh.
Hoo-hoo.
There was a bacon contest, and they had a sweet and a savory category. That was obviously in the sweet.
Yes, and she also told me that two different people followed a recipe for bacon and beer pecan bars, and even using the same recipe, they both tasted completely different. So it is in the individual cooker, baker, that resides the supreme flavoring.
Very good.
The other thing that I had at the market was the Bergie's truck. You know, they have that beautiful made-over old, what is it? Let's see. He told me it was a 1958 van that's been restored by some local people called the Skunk River Restoration. They did an amazing job. The van looks like these old milk trucks. I can remember because my dad had a milk distribution riding around because the door slides open and it only has that one elevated seat. And Dad used to let us ride, I couldn't have been more than five, on the floor with the door open. My mother probably didn't know this. But so anyway, they have this van, and they have a cold brewed nitro coffee. So they take the coffee, and it's cold brewed. Uh-huh. And I ask her about their cold brew technique. So you use a not too fine grind. You let it sit 12 hours with cold water, and then you filter it off. Now, I'm a big cold brew person at home, too, because I love it. I just use my press pot. But then they add nitrogen.
Oh, dear.
So that gives it – it's like the nitro beers that we've been talking about out at Alluvial. And other places are, you know, nitro beer is the rage. So now nitro coffee. So I got it and I shared it with Lana and I stayed up all night because it was probably more coffee than I'm used to drinking.
It was amazingly delicious. And because of the bubbles in it, it really had the feel in the mouth. Like
creamy.
Well, I'm always up for new things. So that was a nice new
thing. And it was delicious. I found that with beers, the nitrogen, because it's a smaller bubble of carbonation than the usual CO2 carbonation or something. Anyway, it makes smaller bubbles. So it gives a different texture to both the beer and the coffee. And especially in the coffee, you can get more of the flavor out of it. It was delicious. So I recommend that if you see that Bergie's truck, try a nitro coffee. But watch out.
Well, maybe they should sell it in smaller cups.
Right.
You shared it with me. And, it was a strong one there.
Yeah, it was delicious. So we had a lot of good beer and sweets experiences over the weekend in our from our lovely local population.
Yes, and speaking of farmers market, we meet the nicest people at farmers market.
Yes, we do.
And there's lots of new vendors, and they all have wonderful stories to tell.
So this is Tom Wilson from, I always say it wrong, is it Remnant Hills Farm?
Remnant Hills Farm.
Remnant Hills Farm. And your partner is Taylor?
Williams.
Taylor Williams. So we have... We have Tom here this morning, and he's going to – I've been buying his pork. In fact, I love eating the odd bits, or some people call them the nasty bits, but the organ meats. So I bought some organ meats a couple of weeks ago. I thought, he had some pig butchering. So I got a tongue, a heart, a liver, and a kidney. And I was just actually cooking the organ meats up for dog food because I really treat my dogs well. And I took a taste of each of them, and they were, I mean, I like organ meats, but these were really, really superior, Tom. I don't know what you're doing, but they were yummy. Do you think it was the breed or your, now you feed all non-GMO, which is why I like to buy, and they're all pasture raised.
Yep. I do think it is probably more coming into the pig, what we put into the pig and how the pig lives its life out.
So what are those pigs eating?
They have their non-GMO feed.
Which is?
It's beyond just a corn and soy mix. There's a lot of other ingredients. There's some small grains in there, some tree nuts, some herbal
tree nuts. What kind of tree nuts?
There's almonds, and I believe there's a little bit of flax in there.
Wow.
And then also there's some probiobiotics and some vitamins. So there's it's a pretty complex.
So are you mixing this yourself?
We get it from Des Moines Feed Company is who supplies our feed for both the pigs and the chickens.
So this is a special mixture that they've worked up for?
Yep. Stan is the guy in charge down at Des Moines Feed Company, and he's very knowledgeable about the different ingredients and the nutritional values of feeding animals. And we worked with him when we were first getting started, and we put together this mix, and we've been very happy with it ever since.
I have to say, I eat both your eggs and Lana's eggs regularly, and I usually stick to the two of you because I know you're feeding non-GMO, and your eggs are delicious.
Yeah.
They're so – in fact, I ran out of eggs last week, and I had to go somewhere else to get some eggs. And when I cracked them – I was making ice cream, and when I cracked them, I went, right. These are not very yellow. I'm spoiled.
Yeah.
So you feed that to your chickens too?
We have it's another mix. There's some things that are a little bit different for the chicken feed, but yep, we get that from there.
And then they're out foraging around. And what do they eat when they're in their foraging?
Yep. So we have them on pasture. We rotate them to a new piece of pasture twice a week.
The pigs and the chickens?
The chickens are on the pasture. Uh-huh. Right now the pigs are going through our woods. So they have a section of woods, a paddock that we'd call it, and we let them kind of root through that and work their way through the vegetation. And then we move on to a new section with the chickens. It's a quicker rotation, usually twice a week, and we built a mobile coop on a hay rack. Mm. So we pull that with the truck, and we just move that with the electric fence and their feeders and their waters. And, you know, they're outside every day. We let them out in the morning. They go in right before dark. And so I think that sunlight and going through the grasses, the pasture that we planted in this year, you know, looking for bugs, looking for little insects, things like that.
And what are the pigs eating in the woods?
The roots. So any plant vegetation. They're going through there and they're turning everything over. They're looking, you know, for bugs as well. When they, you know, there's old logs or stumps, they'll go, you know, something that's already starting to kind of work its way through with the help of bugs, they'll go through that. But a lot of it's in the dirt, so they're going through and they're eating on the roots. And
are there acorns back there too?
We don't have any. Unfortunately, we don't have any oaks on the property. So
hickory nuts? Do they eat hickory nuts?
Nope. We do have some walnuts, but we don't. We're hoping that they don't do as much with the walnuts. Too much walnuts, not quite as good as like the acorns. So, but they're not. You know, they have their feed that they get in the morning and evening. We do also give them some vegetable scraps as well.
And so, how many pigs? For how many acres? How does that work?
Well, for us, it's the first, you know, this is our first year. We're renting a property. And so working with the landowners on that, we wanted to make sure that we're improving the property and we're sustaining that property. And so we have started off with small groups of pigs. We wanted to make sure that when we're rotating through that we're not causing any damage to the mature trees that are on the property. So what we want to do is improve it, leave it better than it was. So with the pigs, we've been doing small groups of pigs, anywhere from 4 to 6 at a time.
Mm-hmm.
The
acreage. Now, they like to hang out in groups, right?
Yep, they like to stay together. You know, mm-hmm. they're very social. So they have an electric fence that keeps them in their area. Mm-hmm. And so when we get ready to move them to a new one, they're just, you know, we open up the gate, essentially, and they go into that new section and go back to work. Kind of rooting that up.
So do you work like a 1 acre section at a time or no smaller?
Much smaller, yep. And it's really kind of based off the lay of the land. So there's a waterway that's moving through that we've kind of been working alongside of. It's has a little bit of hill to it as well. So we don't want them, you know, we want to just kind of balance how they're moving through it. And we don't really have a set formula for how many weeks or a week or more, how
so
it may be.
So you look at the vegetation
it's how
and how the land looks.
And what's left on it. And mm-hmm. So then once they're ready, then we move them through to the next area. And once again, it's really since we're establishing everything for the first time, I've got to go ahead and cut the fence line through. That can add into sometimes it might be a little bit smaller than the last one just based off
he's a good age for that, you know. Yeah. This is a good thing for a young farmer to be doing.
Definitely.
Then by the time you're old, it'll be established.
Yeah. The property was really not utilized for the last couple decades. So there's a lot of overgrowth. There's a lot of invasive species, the honeysuckle, mulberry, different types of.
Well, did the pigs back that up?
Oh,
down?
Yeah. Yep, they'll knock that down.
So
they'll
it's
even eat
like,
the
is
leaves.
Is it like using
so
goats?
It's very similar, and we have goats and sheep as well, and they're doing the same thing in different portions of the property. So we're trying to clear out kind of the bad things, and then we're going to come back and we're replanting and hoping to reestablish some things that the landowner wants to have on the property. They have a kind of a grand scheme for what it's going to – they're working with Luke Grand.
Luke is doing a lot of fun –
So
and you guys are all down in the same area, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where is your farm?
So we are northeast of Cambridge. Would be just west, a couple miles west of where the berry patch is.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of in that area northeast of Cambridge.
Is it a little rolly on your piece?
We do, yep.
Because the berry patch is beautiful.
Yeah, a 40-acre piece, and there's a pond on it, a couple pastures, and then as well as a timber area.
Oh, fantastic.
And we are technically renting 10 acres of that, and that was, you know, tillable land, corn mm-hmm. and beans. Corn, mm-hmm. It was beans last year. We have planted that to a new pasture with warm and cool season grasses. We have some, you know, some legumes in there.
So it'll have permanent coverage.
Exactly. And
Excellent.
We're trying to, you know, build back the health of the soil. It probably had a little bit of a rough time over the years, so we're hoping to get nutrients back in.
Yeah.
As the whole idea with the property is that we'll be improving it for them in the future. They're giving us a really nice opportunity to get started.
Now, the landowner is somebody that's, like, around your age?
Yep. His name is Matt Parker. I grew up with him.
Uh-huh.
And he's very supportive of this. He worked on a farm out in Oregon for about a year with livestock. That farm was following Joel Salatin as far as the methods of how they raise
Which is
their
rotational
livestock.
Grazing, rotation. Multi-species.
Mm-hmm. And pasture-based. Mm-hmm. So he did a little bit of that here as well. And him and his dad have bought the property, and they, like I said, they have some ideas for the future, what they'd like to have. And
so they're probably working on some forestry things because I know that's Luke's big skill set that he's developing.
Yeah, they have kind of different areas of the property. They're deciding what they want out of that. Some, you know, kind of a more of a savanna type, and they're hoping to, you know, they're planting new trees and getting kind of cutting out things that need to be taken out to clear areas to promote the better growth from the trees that they
Great.
Want to keep.
Now let me ask you. So you've got sheep, goats, pigs, chickens. What about predators?
Well, we have a couple livestock guardian dogs out there. Huh. They are puppies still, about
what
8 months
breed
old.
What breed are you using?
They are a cross of Anatolian Shepherds and Great Pyrenees.
Oh, that's what everybody seems to love.
Yeah. We're you know, they're still puppies. They have the puppy energy and, you know, sometimes mischief. But they live out there. They're out there 24/7. We put them in with the different animal groups to create that bond so that they'll know that that's who they're there to protect. We walk them through the property to make sure that they know that this is where, you know, this is their area and this is what they keep an eye on. So we have them there. You know, they're starting to do what we want. You hear them barking at night. You can hear them. If they hear or see something, they'll go and bark. So we're hoping that will deter most of the predators around us. You know, we worry about land-based animals, coyotes, fox, raccoon skunks, as well as hawks and owls. So
what's going to happen in the winter? Everybody's still going to stay out?
We're going to be kind of centralizing everybody. So all the animal groups will be coming into one area that has kind of a nice wind block to it.
Is this tree shelter, basically?
Tree, and then we're also going to put in some round bales, just kind of line those up to have additional windbreak.
Mm-hmm.
We have a hoop house that's in the process of being finished out, as well as another one that will be going up.
Now, is that a hoop house for animals or for produce?
We did tomatoes in there this year.
It's in the process. Sell a lot of produce at the market, too.
And then we'll be keeping some of the animals in the hoop houses over the winter. And then we also have some huts for the pigs and go in. So
you sound like you have a whole lot going on. We'll get back to ask you a lot more questions. Yeah. We're the Donna Lana Kitchen. This is KHOI 89.1. We're talking to Tom Wilson from Remnant Hills Farm. We're going to take a bit of time to consider all of Central Iowa is getting ready for the first frost here. Birds are heading south. This is a tune by the Burlington Street Bluegrass Band featuring Fiddler Al Murphy. It's called Listen to the Mockingbird. We're back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. That was fiddler Al Murphy with the Burlington Street Bluegrass Band. They play almost twice a month, I think, over in Iowa City at a place called The Mill. And they've been doing that for a fine long time. Al Murphy is kind of the treasure of Iowa. He just plays the fiddle so good, and lots of other folks are helping him there too. We're back here in the studio with Tom Wilson from Remnant Hills Farm, and he has, for just being, you said this is the first year you are doing this. You are an ambitious sort of folk, I say. There, anybody that takes on animals who all have individual minds of their own, and then doing it in such a well thought out bit here. This is good. Tell me a little bit more about your hog breeds, about the pigs that you are free ranging and also teaching to stay within movable fences. Now, teaching a hog anything, they end up teaching us more, I think. Oh, so yeah. Tell us about your breeds of hogs.
And like I said earlier, so being on a property, we wanted to make sure that we weren't going too big, too fast. We've been starting out with small groups, and we've had three different groups go through. And they have been a cross of either the Hereford and Berkshire, either the Red Wattle and Berkshire, and some straight Hereford as well. So we've had those types there,
so
Hereford and Berkshire.
So what was this organ meat that I'm raving about?
That would have been from the Berkshire and the Hereford.
Okay.
And we have also, the Red Wattle has a little bit of that coming on. We just had a couple pigs up to Story City that we're excited to have the pork back for this weekend's market. So that'll be both from a Red Wattle Berkshire and also from a Hereford Berkshire. So
okay.
We'll, if you'd like, be able to do some comparison. We do have an idea of
which
one
is which.
Part of them.
Okay.
So, and with that, so that's, you know, getting the different crosses. We wanted to try different breeds. You know, it is kind of hard, though, in central Iowa for heritage breeds, and there's not that many people raising them. So when we have looked
at... But do they do well here?
Definitely. And they, you know, they thrive in the conditions that we are allowing them to live in. You know, they are made to, you know, they haven't been changed. They like to be outside. They can handle the weather. They know what to do. They have the instinct still to live and thrive. So we've traveled anywhere from an hour to nearly 3 hours in the state of Iowa to pick these pigs up, bringing them back.
So they're how old when you get them?
We have been doing them at a feeder age, so typically around 2 months old and 40 pounds. Sometimes they've been a little bit older, so maybe 50 to 60 pounds. And then we'll have them and we'll feed them out. So when we bring the pigs onto the property, we have a what we'd call a training pen that they go to. That is made of a hard fence. So we have, you know, that support there, infrastructure in case they
And it's electrified also?
And then we have an electric wire that we're training them to on the inside of that. So there is some, you know, there's some squealing going on when they first get adjusted to that. They're getting used to the electric fence. But after a few days, they learn that fence, you know, what it's going to do, and they don't want to get shocked. So they start to respect that wire. We keep them in there anywhere from a week to a week and a half, sometimes two, depending on weather conditions and how they seem to be doing. And once we feel comfortable that they know that they need to stay within that fence, then that's when we would transition them out of the training area into their paddock in the woods. And then that's just two hot wires or two electric wires, one about 6 to 10 inches off the ground and the other one maybe 18 to 24. And they just run around their property. They'll come up to it. You know, there still might be a shock or two every couple times.
They're curious.
They're curious, and they check things out with their snout. So when they're getting to it's a good area to get shocked. It'll teach them a lesson. So they know what's going on, and they'll just be inside of that. They'll actually kind of root right up to it. So they'll go right up to the edge, and that has caused some not necessarily problems, but we've had to get a little creative when we move them from one section to the next because they know that fence, that's where the electric wire was. So even when it's down, they know that that's where it was, and so they're very cautious to cross that line. So they'll come up to it.
These smart pigs.
You know, we definitely wait till it's about feeding time to do it, so then we can
carry them over.
Yeah, we've got the food on the other side, and they're usually drawn to that, but we've had to put down some different items, boards cardboard, different things like that, to just kind of something of a different smell,
and
they'll go right across.
Too, yeah. Yes.
So now you were also talking about some breeds that you might do in the future.
Yep. And so we started off with the feeder pigs that, you know, just finished them out. And actually right now we have two different gilts on the property and with their first litters.
So you're breeding your own too.
So we're starting our own breeding stock. We have a Hereford gilt. It's with her first litter, and the Hereford breed was developed here in Iowa with some gentlemen in the 30s, as well as I believe there's a farm in Nebraska.
Is that the black with the white ring around it?
They are just like the Hereford cow, so the red body and the white legs. So
red body,
a really dark,
legs.
You know, kind of a cinnamon red sometimes, a little brown, but reddish tint to them. And so we have her, and she was from a farm up in northern Iowa, from a gentleman that's with Practical Farmers of Iowa, Phil Kramer. Very happy with how he's raising his pigs. And so we went up and took a look at the farm and brought one home, and she farrowed for us on September 3rd. And we have seven little piglets from her. So we're hoping to keep one of those, and then we'll have two Herefords that we'll continue to breed. And then we just picked up a couple weeks ago kind of a more specialty breed. It is a cross that's called Iowa Swabian Hall or Iowa Swabian Hall.
Oh, those are supposed to be what is it? The fat that's supposed to be so good on them?
Yeah, very dark red meat, and then also a very bright white fat to them. So it's a cross of a wild boar, a wild Russian boar with a Chinese Meishan is the breed of the Chinese sow. And so you get the red meat and some of the instincts and the foraging capabilities from the boar.
And what do they look like?
They look a little wild. They're much smaller body. You know, we think of pigs, and pigs get pretty round. That's what we're used to. And these pigs would look more like if you, you know, saw the wild razorback or something like that. They've got that style to them. Longer, narrower kind of faces. Mm-hmm. And no tufts. But, so, you know, they what they're known for is their ability to gain their weight just on forage. So we actually have them on the pasture, and they go through and they're eating just like, you know, if you had sheep or cows grazing, they're eating off of that. We do give them the feed as well, but the guy that we got them from did say that, you know, he didn't put a whole lot of feed in, and they would get up to, you know, your processing weight that way. So more of a, you know, a natural forager for us.
So what brings you to this wonderful way to farm? What's your background?
Yeah, so Taylor and I got started. This is our first year with the farm, and it had, you know, I've gardened for pretty much my whole life. Through the end of the days of college and a couple years after that, I was living with some guys, and we had chickens. And I think if you get some backyard chickens, you might start to want to get a little bit more into it. But
I know. Yeah.
That was, you know, the introduction into it. And I think just the more that you read about it, you look online, you read about these great farmers that have different ways of producing food that people, I think, value, just how they're raised, what they're doing, why they're doing it. So that kind of got us on that track. And then last year, we spent the year woofing. Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farms.
Oh, I always forget what that is.
Where did you go?
We were in Wisconsin, Michigan, and then up in New England, in Vermont,
New Hampshire.
So you
see a lot of different operations.
Yep. We went to about 8 different farms, and they ranged from, you know, people who are just got it started. There's fifth-generation farmers, you know, small, big, those that have really established themselves, and those that are still trying to get to that step. So it was very beneficial to us to get to see those different, the size and the scale, but also to talk with them and to learn from, you know, what they thought were key, you know, mistakes to try to avoid. Obviously, you need to learn on your own, but it was very beneficial. So it was like a work exchange where we would be on the farm anywhere for 2 weeks to a month. For room and board, we'd work with a farmer every day, go out and do what they have to do, do markets with them. It was more, definitely, to get our hands into it. You know, we wanted to make sure that when we came back that it wasn't just going to be something of a something that we've read about and looked at online, and now we're ready to do it. We wanted to make sure
Tom
we
didn't
could
study
do it.
Agriculture at ISU. He studied Spanish.
Spanish, yes. So, you know, I didn't grow up on a farm either. But, you know, I think that's really what we need. And it seems across the country there are a lot of young farmers that are going back to the land that didn't have any connection to that. And I hope that that's the case. You know, we can look at the statistics in the age of average farmer. We can see, you know, maybe as things narrow down, we want to bring new ideas back. You know, what we're doing, the style that we're doing it is what, you know, people's grandparents were doing. You know, they
That's
had
right.
multi-species on the farm. They raised fruit and vegetables. They did it all. So, you know, we want to kind of do that as well. And so we kind of look to kind of the past. You know, we want to learn from what they've done, but then also kind of have a new twist to it and, you know, take advantage of technology and innovation
mm-hmm.
that we have. So
mm-hmm.
you mentioned all the other species on your farm. Do the chickens and goats and sheep and pigs run together ever? Or
We have the sheep and the goats together, and they are on pasture, and also they go through the brush of some of the woodland as well. So
what are you going to do with the goats?
The goats.
Are they meat goats?
Well, they are meat. Well, one is a dairy goat, and then one is a cross of a dairy and a meat goat. And actually, they were on the farm to be kind of our landscapers. They are there to knock back the overgrowth, to eat the honeysuckle, to take care of what we want to clear up.
Yeah, because they'll jump up and eat things that the sheep are not going to pay attention to. Yeah.
Well, and actually, so we have Katahdin is the breed of sheep that we have.
Ooh.
It's a hair sheep. It's, you know, smaller sheep, but it's mm-hmm. more of a forager as well. And they'll go after the honeysuckle and everything
are
just as much as the goats.
Harvest the wool?
With the hair sheep, you don't really get to because – so they shed that out themselves.
Oh.
We don't have to shear them
so
in the spring.
They're
just lose it. Correct. For both of the groups, we are looking to breed them this fall, and then we'll have lambs and kids in the spring and trying to build up the numbers so we can continue to work the land. You know, when they're out on the pasture, they're dropping manure, and that's helping the cycle and the health of the property. So we want to continue to do that and also use them to knock back some of the overgrowth. So it's kind of a benefit to us and to the animals and to the land. We'll see. You know, we will have, you know, if we have the little guys, lamb and goat
meat. And the dogs grow up to protect them well enough, you'll be...
Yep. Yep. And then we kind of, you know, so right now the sheep and the goats are on a pasture. The chickens are right behind them. So they're out ahead. The chickens follow up. The chickens to kind of, you know,
bust up the manure and, yeah.
Yep. And to get anything that they might have missed. So
it sounds like a lot of work, but in a sense, all you're doing is kind of pushing them into the appropriate places. I think they know how to be animals.
Definitely. But still,
certainly not everything works out perfectly. This sounds like it could be a chaotic mess if
yeah.
a fence gets down.
Well, and so, yeah, with the property, we don't have any infrastructure. There's no water. There's no electricity. So everything that we're doing, we've brought on. It's a permanent system, or not a permanent system, but a rotational system. So the electric fence that we use is a net fence that's electrified for the chickens, for
is
the sheep,
the solar?
Goats. We have solar panels that power batteries, and
mm-hmm.
then the batteries have a charger connected to them that then electrifies the fence. And so we move all that together. It is, you know, when we first got the sheep, we did learn some lessons with the sheep. And if an animal wants to get through something, more than likely they can. So it's been a learning curve for sure. Making sure that they feel comfortable. You don't want
some sheep chasing?
We've done some sheep chasing. So the goats have been very good for us, and they like to actually come up right to us, and they like to get some attention. But the sheep now are fine. In their first week on the farm, they had an adventure, and we're lucky that we
yeah.
still have them. So
how are you handling the watering issues?
Yep. So we initially had thought that we wanted to irrigate off the pond for the animals and for the garden. So we have an acre mm-hmm. in veggies and flowers. We didn't do that this year. The pond needs a little bit of restoration with that. The owners are looking at kind of dredging that out and cleaning that up. So
it was
luckily,
a good year
with
for water
year,
anyway.
Yeah.
So
we didn't have to put in irrigation. We are going to be doing a shallow well. So we can have water on site. We've been just bringing water in.
For the animals?
For the animals, yeah. So.
Well, I hope we don't have to do that all winter.
Yeah,
that can
we
be kind of tricky.
We did that last winter, and you know, we were out in the morning and the evening to bust the ice up and give them fresh water, get their food. So with that, you know, it's part of making sure we earn it. So
it sounds like you do. You are listening to KHOI 89.1 Community Radio. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're tasty radio for the heart of Iowa. We're back. We're here talking about raising all those animals that can have a good life on a farm here in Central Iowa. We're talking to a beginning farmer, Tom Wilson, from Remnant Hills Farm. How was your first summer at Farmer's Market? You had a lovely stand, you had lots to offer, and always a smile, too. So how was it this summer?
We did definitely enjoy it. I think we're pretty blessed with the Ames Farmer's Market. Coming back home and getting started here, you know, there's a lot of things that have made it very possible for us to have some early success, and we're looking forward to continue to build on that. The Farmer's Market, you know, a great little environment with the music, with the food, and a lot of receptive customers. We also have, Farm to Folk. We market through them, and Maryland's really built that up, and most of you know Farm to Folk, and it's a great opportunity to get the product that we think is a high quality to individuals who are looking for that.
So those are the only two ways you're marketing,
right? As of right now, we have gotten into a couple little restaurants here in town with some eggs and some veggies. But for our future, you know, we're looking to we're definitely going to be back at the Ames Farmers Market, continue through Farm to Folk. We're going to maybe try and get down to one of the smaller markets in Des Moines during the week on a Tuesday, as well as, you know, this winter we're looking at starting up kind of a buying group here, dropping off pork or maybe eggs, depending on productivity with the chickens through the winter. On kind of a biweekly basis. So, you know, the customers at the market, we're starting to see some regulars. And I think for all vendors, that really means something to you. You can have people come in and buy different things. But when you start to see those faces every week, it makes you appreciate them supporting the local food movement.
But also, I can imagine they're hooked in the taste quality.
Definitely. And it's, you know, hearing the positive feedback, you know, it keeps us going because, as we all know, you know, it's hard work. And there are definitely the hard days, and there's things that sometimes just don't go as you thought that they would, and you spend a long time trying
chasing
to get them
the
there. So there's, you know, that keeps you going. That keeps you motivated and wanting to continue doing what we're doing. And we're very happy with it. We're looking forward to growing the meat side. So, you know, we're going to have more pigs. We're going to increase that. We'll be doubling our chicken or our egg capacity for next year. So we'll be doing a second mobile coop.
Do you do any broilers?
We're looking at doing the meat birds as well. We want to do everything on pasture. We want to make sure that those animals are living the best that they can, you know, that they have a good stress-free life, that they are acting as natural as possible. With the vegetables, you know, we did an acre of veggies, and there's some things that worked really well for us and some that didn't. So this winter we're looking forward to narrowing our focus on veggies. What has grown well for us we are going to build on. And
so what worked well?
Definitely we have a sandier soil. So a lot of the, you know, melons were very good.
Plus it was a good year for melons.
Melons, eggplant, peppers. We're looking forward to doing more of potatoes and onions, sweet potatoes. We want to kind of focus on products and crops that can go year-round, so some winter squash storage crops. Mm-hmm. Also looking at how we can maybe do dry beans or popcorn or things that for us to be able to
now,
sell
dry
through
beans
the winter.
There's not a lot of it around here yet.
Exactly.
That's a good –
exactly.
So that could be a good one.
We want to be able to preserve some, you know, the harvest and continue on with it. There's a lot of great vegetable vendors at the market, and we know that, you know, for us, what we enjoy is more with the animals. So we don't want to focus too much on the vegetable production or the flowers, but we also, you know, it's nice, and we like that too. So – you can kind of get stretched too thin sometimes. Mm-hmm. So we're going to make sure that what we're spending our time on is as efficient as possible with the vegetable production, and that we can, you know, focus on animals and keep things moving in the right direction.
Now you're processing, you can process your sheep, goats, and pigs at Store City Locker.
Correct. Yep.
And you were saying that they're looking into maybe getting a scalder. Tell everybody what a scalder is and why I'm so excited about it.
So the scalder is going to allow
it's an expensive piece of equipment, and hardly any of our smaller lockers have this.
Correct. And you really don't find it anywhere in Iowa, but it allows the producer and the locker to offer products or pieces of the animal that has, you know, skin. So if you're looking at ears, if you're looking at
tails,
tails,
trotters,
heads,
which are feet, heads.
There's a lot of restaurants and there's a lot of very talented chefs in Des Moines and Ames and other areas of the state that can't find that. They're trying to introduce people to something that is going to be very delicious.
Well, it's very traditional.
But it's hard to get it. So.
Because you have to clean them well, mm-hmm. which people used to do on their own. But now because we have really excellent inspection, which is necessary, it takes a fairly expensive piece of equipment to get these things clean enough to go through inspection. So, yeah. Like right now, all of those parts of the pig are being discarded.
Discarded, correct. And, you know, for us, we want to take advantage of everything. You know,
we
put everything
eating.
Into it. We want to get everything back and take advantage of everything that we can. So
if Story City gets a scalder, we're going to be celebrating on the Donalana Kitchen. We're going to be doing some recipes for pig's feet, pig's ears, pig's tails.
Well, also, if one does a whole suckling pig, isn't that with the skin on?
Well, I think with... It's usually more of a custom process.
Oh, that wouldn't be – okay, that's a whole custom thing.
Yeah, that might be a little bit different as far as going to restaurants or farmer's market, et cetera.
Right, right, right. We're talking small chunks of interesting parts, and we can look forward to that. Oh, thanks for sharing all this stuff, you know. We've been talking to Tom Wilson from Remnant Hills Farm, and it sounds like you are just getting started.
Definitely. Thank you very much for the opportunity to come on the show.
Oh, wonderful. Great. Well, October 14th is coming up real soon, and it's Columbus Day.
Well, it's been called Columbus
it's
Day
been
for
called,
a long
time.
Some people are now calling it Indigenous Peoples Day.
We can do that. We can do that. We often do a book review here, and often we do a recipe book review, but this is a book I'd like to recommend. It has doesn't have many recipes in it at all. It's a history book. It's a research book on history. And there's shows that there were people kind of sailing around the globe and poking into corners, maybe even in North America and
Very
South America.
Very curious and brave and foolhardy people.
Yes. There was a lot more going on in the world than Christopher Columbus, a lot more than what we learned in our history books. I read the book, I got it from the Ames Public Library, called 1421, The Year China Discovered America by Gavin Menzies. It is the story of, and this guy is a researcher. He's a sailor. He goes around. He loves old maps. And by studying old documents specifically old maps all around the world, and actually he's a sailor, so he checked out a lot of coastlines himself, he found out that the largest fleet the world ever had seen sailed from its base in China on March 8th in 1421. There were hundreds and hundreds of huge, huge ships with a whole bunch of support ships around it. They broke off into three separate parts and sailed all over the place, actually around the world. And they sailed until they got back to China. Some of them even went up into North America, South America.
So they were way ahead of all those Europeans.
They had their mapping down. At least they learned a lot about it. So instead of Columbus, we should be maybe celebrating Zhao Man, Zhao Wen, Hong Bao, and Yang Qing for all of the stuff that they did. An interesting book, 1421, The Year China Discovered America.
Well, and I have a little thing I wanted to read that was given to me by my Chilean friend, Carlos Toledo Parada. And he translated it from the Spanish because it was written by a Uruguayan poet named Eduardo Galeano. So here's a little translation from Carlos. In 1492, natives discovered they were Indians. They discovered they lived in the Americas. They discovered they were naked. They discovered that sin existed. They discovered they had to obey a king and queen from another world and a god from another heaven, and that said god had invented guilt and clothing, and that whoever person who worships the sun, the moon, the earth, and the rain should be burned. There you have it, Columbus Day.
So let's raise a glass to brave explorers everywhere and realize that...
And to the wonderful indigenous people that had a lot going on here before the white man cometh.
And we are really all immigrants here. All of those Scandinavian pastries came from immigrants. Ah, yes. Yes. Oh, also, there's an upcoming thing happening. October 24th at the Arboretum, the Iowa Arboretum, there is a class on the Three Sisters. A speaker will come and talk about the Three Sisters.
Are corn and beans and squash.
Yep. For more, that's October 24th.
Probably something that Columbus saw when he arrived here.
And that's at the Iowa Arboretum. You can find out more at iowaarboretum.org. And the Donalana Kitchen will be there.
We'll be cooking corn and beans and squash.
We'll be doing some food.
The Arboretum website and sign up for the class if you would like. It's iowaarboretum.org.
That's it. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen with special guest Tom Wilson from Remnant Hills Farm. Wish him lots of luck in his future. You've heard the music of the Burlington Street Bluegrass Band from their CD Live at the Mill in Iowa City. They're fine folks, all of them. Listen to the Donalana Kitchen Live Tuesdays at noon. It's repeated at 7 p.m. Go to khoifm.org, streaming live, and find the Donalana Kitchen website page there. And go to find past shows and find recipes. My name's Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had engineering by Rick Morrison. Eat good food and enjoy life. This is the Burlington Street Bluegrass Band with the singing of Amy Fenders.
Paper steel, paper ink and lead, trying